Wait, what is my normal?
Half an hour minimum.
Are you serious? No. Ready? Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to day two of the Fish and Game hearing here in San Diego, California. My name is Michael Flores. I'm currently serving as president of the commission here. I'd like to also introduce my fellow commissioners. Sitting next to me is Commissioner Richard Rogers from Carpinteria, California. To my right is Commissioner Cindy Gustafson from Tahoe City. Joining us shortly would be Commissioner Bob Hatoy from Santa Monica. Maybe you could pan over there and show him where he's at. Also is Mr. John Carlson, Executive Director of the Commission. Also with us is Mr. John McGammon, Chief Deputy Director of the Department of Fish and Game. Mr. Sankey Mastra, Deputy Director. Also with us is Mr. William Cunningham, who is our legal counsel. And again, our award-winning staff, Sherry Cole, Adriana Shea, and John Fisher. And out in the audience is Mr. Gary Stacy and Neil Manji, of whom you'll be hearing from later. So welcome, everyone. We have a pretty full agenda, and we will get started here shortly. And I also like to thank Warden Noel Richards for being with us. Thank you. With that, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you. We didn't finish up the agenda yesterday. We have a few items, and we're still on number 10H. On the other end of it, we're almost wrapped up on that. We'll make it very fast. One thing that the department wanted to mention was the mammal regulation scoping session is October 11th. And Sonk, if you want to mention that, and then John.
You just did.
But I mean, well, the importance of that.
Okay.
Good morning, commissioners, and I'll make this quick. The significance of mentioning the scoping, and it's in the context of often arguing that on very controversial issues, we'd like to get discussions going sooner so we have more opportunity for a full debate. Based on recent reports and issues and potential lawsuit on condor lead issue, the department will be scoping and including a lead-free alternative for big game hunting in condor counties that have condors. So we will be bringing you that package as part of the mammal regs so we can fully discuss and decide what we do. Just wanted to give you fair warning, and if there's any preferences you have, we'll be looking forward to any communications. The other item under other, just a cleanup from yesterday, I misspoke about adding the multi-day trip issue to the triennial. We can't. The comment period for recommendations passed in August. So we would be actually doing a separate ISOR and a separate regulatory, and I take it you're still interested in us moving forward
yes.
on that. Okay. That's all I have.
Thank
Any
you.
Questions?
Mr. McCammon?
I have two other items just to update you. Proposed Lake Davis eradication project. The EIR was issued on September 1st, which allows the department to move the project forward. It has a preferred alternative. There's 45-day comment period. We've held two public hearings in Portola several weeks ago, and then yesterday two hearings in Sacramento to take input on the EIR. After the public comment period is closed, we'll consider the comments that are received and prepare responses to them. Our current timeline calls for a decision in the February time frame. The director makes the decision. However, there will be implementation policy requirements that will come before this commission in May, June next year, if we proceed with the project. I can't prejudge the outcome.
Okay.
The other draft EIR that is about ready to be released in the mid to late October will be the Salton Sea Ecosystem Restoration Study and Draft Programmatic EIR. It's not project specific, it's programmatic. It'll be out for public review 60 to 90 days. The Secretary of Resources, Crisman, will make a recommendation to the legislature and governor. The statutory process that was established requires him to make that recommendation December 31st. It doesn't look like we're going to quite make that. I think it's more reasonable to say late February and March for a recommendation from the secretary to the appropriate authorities. The draft EIR, I'll consider 8 alternatives plus a no-action alternative. It's a pretty comprehensive document. But again, it's only programmatic in nature. And there's no recommended preferred alternative. Once the preferred alternative is selected through the programmatic process, another iteration of the CEQA process will have to occur on a project basis. And you'll be hearing more about that, I'm sure, as time goes on.
Great. Thank you. Questions, comments? Okay.
One public speaker card on this, Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Well, it was demonstrated yesterday that we have a lot of positions that are now being filled by new, inexperienced people, and we would like this opportunity to discuss institutional memory. It seems the Fish and Game and the Fish and Game Commission continually have new people showing up on the scene that have not done their homework and have no institutional memory of the things that went before them. And it seems that we have to rehash and relearn every time someone new takes a position. Our institutional memory has been degraded over the years by the destruction of documents, the loss of failed studies, and the surveys that didn't go well seem to disappear. I believe that the institutional memory is very important, and record keeping is the most important duty of a public servant. These things need to be improved, and improved in great order, so that the institutional memory can be guaranteed and counted on for future reference. That is all.
Thank you.
Moving to item 11, receipt of commission informational items. Under staff reports, there are no staff reports at this time. But under other, we have a couple things I need to bring to the attention of the commission. One is AGP Video, who've been filming our meetings for several years now, informed me just recently that their grant was not renewed, and so they will be out of funding starting in January 1. And I was wondering if Steve wanted to make a few comments about that and just get a little discussion on amongst the commissioners on.
I think he's going to show you some pretty interesting data.
Yeah, I'm going to try. Actually, computer's barking at me. It does this every time. Steve Matthew, AGP Video. As a lot of you may know or not know, we started videotaping and distributing via various methods back in August of 2002, the Fish and Game Commission meetings, the first one being in San Luis Obispo, and pursued for the next 6 months shooting the meetings because of its impact on our local area, to be quite honest, Morro Bay being a fishing community. And then in January of 2003, we made a presentation to the Central Coast Cable Fisheries Liaison Committee, who's a fund committee created specifically to distribute funding that they garner from Coastal Commission mitigation for the landings of AT&T, MCI, and a number of other cable landings in the county of San Luis Obispo that interrupt the commercial and sport fishing industries. There are no fish zones, basically. Yet another one. They also saw the value of broadcasting this information to the entire fishing and hunting community throughout the state. Like I said, initially our distribution was one-on-one with DVDs and tapes to individuals who were interested, as well as the six city and county government access channels that we have in San Luis Obispo. And then we also enjoyed for about 2 years statewide distribution on the California channel. At a point in time, we were overproducing, basically produced more meetings than the California channel could handle because they have limited access on all of the cable systems throughout the state. It was at that point that we decided to go more web stream based. And what I did want to share with you, and we're trying to get it up, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen, is some interesting data that we've just installed programs in our new servers that we switched up in May, and we can now produce hard numbers data on the kind of usage that's taking place with what we're doing. We have a grand total in the last 5 months of 266,000 hits on our CalSpan and SlowSpan sites collectively. Oddly enough, the peak, and this can be tied directly to you guys, the peak was 70,000 hits in August when the Fish and Game Commission had six individual days of meeting with regards to marine issues mostly. Obviously, it's being watched. I put that out there to indicate that this has become a very useful tool to a large segment of the population, certainly everyone who's interested in all fish and game issues. It's also become an invaluable tool, I believe, for staff, because as we've gone along, we've instituted and created a better user product in the form of key point indexing and tying the video specifically to the agendas and the staff reports and all background materials that are already on the servers with the department. This I put out just as an overview to justify the fact that we are going to have to come forward probably to the department with a proposal and have one prepared, realizing that it does take some time to get through a new budget line item process. We are looking to other means of funding, but that gets pretty clumsy. And in the case of the other state agencies that we are contracted with, they have successfully gotten budget line items through specific to this task, because outreach and distribution of meetings has become a recognized valuable tool, and a number of departments are doing it. Coastal Commission is writing a proposal as we speak. They actually put it out to RFP a year ago but didn't have the funding. Now they have the funding and want to start January 1. The OPC, as you know, has been, since their conception, contracting to perform these services. State Water Board, there's a number of them out there. So we have plenty of precedents for you guys to work with, and also plenty of proposal description, for lack of better terminology. Any specific questions? Or
go ahead. Did you have a call?
Oh, well, no, you're going to discuss this now, aren't you?
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I just think it's incredibly important to have this kind of public availability to what we do. And so whatever funding sources any of us can gin up, I think I would certainly recommend to the commission that we do so. And the department, of course.
The
department's got a lot of money. They could fund this.
Yeah, all those positions.
All that money. No, I completely agree. I hear constant feedback from constituents throughout the state that they tune in when they can't be with us, especially with us moving all over, and are able to track and follow what we're doing, and it's invaluable to the public to see this. So we'll do what we can to find you some funding and keep you here, Steve.
Thanks.
Tremendous resource.
I think it actually, I mean, just as a side thought, if I could throw it back on, something that Marcy brought up is I think it already saves the department and the state an immeasurable amount of money in the individual department personnel not having to travel to each and every meeting and to be able to track it as it's happening from the department. Right there's a line item expense that I wouldn't even know how to calculate, but I know is real because I'm footing my expenses.
Not to mention the entertainment value and the humor. Exactly,
I was thinking with the rating numbers we're getting, I think two of those staff positions might be hair and makeup. Do you contract with the OPC right now, the Ocean Protection Council?
Yes, we have a.
So maybe, yeah, okay.
3-year contract with them. We shot them from the beginning.
Okay. And I was hoping that. Okay, thank you.
You bet. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, we just covered the California World Ocean Conference under the auspices of the OPC is how we got down there and then realized that the entire thing should be covered. So we actually covered with three people 8 rooms that were running continuously for 3 days, 54 programs, hour and 45-minute programs we produced that we're still processing. And we'll all be on calspan.org.
Steve, do you need any letters of support from the commission for, and I mean, are you going to be putting in for other grants beyond the one you currently have? I mean, if you need letters, let us know.
I will.
Support.
At this point, I'm shooting you a memo that is actually in my email, and I figure we'll take it from there, see how we can approach this as a joint effort. It's part of what happened with the Cable Fisheries Liaison Committee is they have been for the last 2 years asking that we actively go out there and find partners. We did, and to a lesser level than they had hoped. I mean, we got little bits from the individual harbors in San Luis Obispo County, both Port San Luis and Morro Bay, as well as the short contract that we have with you for the AV services at the meeting. But they were looking for more like a matching funds kind of partners. And we've been having a hard time going out and working at getting the money as well as doing the job. So if you have any ideas, there are a number of the larger associations, I'm sure, that would probably, but it takes some coordination to get that all together.
Thank you, Steve.
Sankey, just a question, if I may. How wide are the cable landing no fishing zones?
Excuse me?
You said there were cable landing no fishing zones?
Yeah, cable landings. I think there's 3 of them in San Luis Obispo County.
How big are they? Do you know?
No, I'm not sure.
I don't either. I've never heard anything about them.
And they do interrupt. They obviously dissect their trans-Pacific cables that are, become no fish zones, which is why the Coastal Commission wrote that in as a mitigation. And I think they get about $500,000 a year to distribute to the commercial and sport fishing industries for different projects. Well, now,
who makes that distribution?
It's a board that was formed by the cable companies themselves. It's comprised of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, and the cable companies, representatives from the cable companies themselves.
Isn't it to my fellow commissioners of the commission's interest to find out about that and get a report on that at one of our next meetings? I would certainly think so. I would like to know what they're spending the money on. I would like to know what authority it all is, et cetera, et cetera. How big they are, where they are, exactly.
The line behind us, just to give you an idea, has gotten very long. And part of what they're doing here is they want to start some new projects. So they're funding individual scientists or funding different groups to do fish counts, species counts, and things like that. They also are, over the past 3 years, have dedicated about $500,000 to building a new ice maker in Morro Bay for the commercial fishing fleet out of that whole area. They've bought the equipment. They haven't been able to install it. That's kind of a white elephant situation for them.
I don't want to overstate the obvious, but the fact that I would be willing to bet not a single commissioner up here knows anything about this is rather stunning.
It is. It is. And they're obviously a small force out there to be reckoned with, and it would be good to get some more information on them. But I do want to thank them publicly for funding this for the last 4 years. Make no mistake about it.
Well, I'm not
it.
On these their
are,
case.
These are not.
It's just that
these
this
are
is,
good guys.
This is
they're
a,
also they're trying to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I'm not on their case, Dave. What I'm if they're one of the weapons in our arsenal of available things that we can work with, that's something we need to know about.
I follow you. Yes.
Thank you, Steve. John?
Thank you.
Okay.
Just a couple other quick things. We have been pursuing a budget change proposal to get some more staff on the commission support staff to do a better job of support for the commission as a whole. We ran into a little snag recently. The Department of Finance has issued a basically a ruling now that no new positions in state government, if they're connected to any kind of general fund funding, unless there's a equal reduction in state government in another part of state government. So for us to get a few positions, there's going to have to be an equal reduction elsewhere, and we don't really have the power to reduce. Maybe we'd like to reduce other folks, but we don't have that power.
Do we get to make suggestions on that? Or
right. You have to carry them forward, but we it's not the end of the line right now. We still have some other options, and we're working it through and working closely with the department on this issue. But I just wanted to give a little update on that. And then last thing is that staff is going to be preparing suggested meeting locations for the 07 calendar year. And with the new legislation, SB 1535, that went through, we'll have a little more flexibility. We'll be bringing those to you soon. Yep. And we have one public speaker on this issue, Paul Weakland.
Commissioner Paul Weakland, I was going to pass, but I believe that you should know that the first communications cable was laid in the ocean and completed in 1853, and that these communication cables are on every nautical chart, and the expressed desires and requirements around those areas are written on those charts. Thank you.
Item 12, subcommittee reports and recommendations. Marine Resources Committee has not met recently, and we're working on coming up with a date for a meeting, hopefully in early November. We're working on that. Nothing to report. I don't know if any commissioners have a comment on that right now. And then on the Altauscher Preserving, Hunting, and Sport Fishing, there was a meeting a couple of weeks back. The committee is moving forward on several subcommittee items, and their next meeting on that is November 30th in Sacramento. I don't really have any other comments on that. And the legislation subcommittee has not had a meeting. No report on that right now.
Right. Okay, we already did item number 13.
We actually have a public comment at 12 a.m., sorry.
Okay.
Paul Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. The Marine Resources Committee seems things are being held up. You consider it so important that you sweep things under the rug and push it back to the Marine Subcommittee to the point now that you don't want to talk about anything, so we won't even have a meeting for a few months just to keep things dragging along slowly.
Thank you. Okay, item number 13 we did yesterday, so
yep.
We're up to item number 14. No report?
No report on 14.
Okay.
And 15, no new business. He'll do that next
time. Okay. It's not on here. Okay.
We had a speaker card for number 15, but we don't have anything on that item.
Yeah.
So we don't need
no. No, we have one more item from yesterday. Executive.
So moving to today's agenda, item number 16, announcement of results from executive session. Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Bill Cunningham, Deputy Attorney General, Counsel for the California Fish and Game Commission, and good morning, Commissioners. I want to report that yesterday we did meet during our lunch also in executive session, pursuant to the government code that allows the commission to meet with its lawyers to talk about matters in litigation, pending litigation, possible litigation, and also to discuss matters involving license and permit issues. We did take some action yesterday regarding license and permit issues. The following action was taken in regards to the request of Mr. Steve Martisich for a transferable lobster operator permit. That permit was approved. To the request for Mark Karmelik for a transferable lobster operator permit, that request was denied. The request of Mr. Lauro Sarispe regarding a nearshore fishery trap endorsement permit, that was also denied. And action was taken on two separate petitions to revoke commercial fishing licenses and permits on the permits of a Mr. Long Van Nguyen and Adet Nguyen. Both of those were determined to consist of facts supporting revocation of commercial fishing licenses and all permits and licenses associated with commercial fishing licenses. So the commercial fishing licenses and all permits are permanently revoked for both of those gentlemen. And that's all the action we took in executive session yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I have no public speaker cards on that one. And going on to number 17, receipt of public testimony on proposed changes to the triennial sport fishing regulations for 07-09. I have a little introduction on this issue. By current statute, the Commission reviews all of its sport fishing regulations at least every 3 years during a four-meeting process, commencing in early August and including meetings in October, November, and December. At the August 4th meeting, the Commission received written and oral recommendations from the Department and the public. These were included with the public recommendations received in the Commission office since we went through this process in 03. These included those that have been received since 03. The department has summarized and analyzed each of these recommendations. Today, the commission will take public testimony on proposed changes in the angling regulations. Before we get started, I'd like to draw your attention to the public materials on the table, including this meeting times and locations. You'll also find what we call the numerical. This includes all the regulations proposed for change, including some resulting in public suggestions. Additional information is available on the Fish and Game Commission's website at fgc.ca.gov. Today, the testimony will be limited to items appearing in the numerical and or department summary of public recommendations. No new recommendations will be heard. The Commission will also take testimony today on the draft environmental documents associated with this regulatory process. So at this time, we'll turn it over to the department, Neil Mangi, and others from the department will be giving a brief overview of the new proposals submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Mangi, for that report.
Any questions?
No.
What's that?
I said there was humor.
Yeah. We try.
It's last night's humor, actually.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, I used to call him Neil.
Good morning, Commissioners, Commission staff, Neil Mangi, Fish and Game, Fisheries Branch. Today I'd like to present to you some additional public recommendations that the department has reviewed and is proposing for your consideration. As you're aware, in your August meeting, I presented 11 initial statements of reasons and provided a PowerPoint. Felt that that went fairly well. Some of them were very complex, others weren't, but thought we would do the same this go around. There were, out of the 11, the department, through testimony in your August meeting, has amended three of those and has also accept and developed initial statement of reasons for an additional six public recommendations. I'd like to go through those now very briefly. The three amended initial statements that the department has amended were the movement of live fish in section 1.63. There is some discussion whether it was amended to clarify that it's illegal to transport live fish from waters were taken. I believe Commissioner Rogers had some concern regarding bait fish and in use within boats. So we tried to clear that up and make it very specific that it is when you're traveling, trailing fish or bait. Fishing methods general, there was some discussion through your Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Cunningham, and others that we add in a section on snagging and try to clean that up. So we amended 2.0 to include a definition of snagging, and you could read it there. And I think that's going to help enforce them out in terms of citations. The last one that we amended was one on Big Lake in Northern California. You had some testimony there. That was an area where there was some black bass fishing during the winter, and the department initially proposed to close it all fishing because we thought that there was going to be significant impacts to the trout populations in that Spring Creek area. Since then, we went back, worked with the constituents, and now have an open all year with a zero bag limit from the time November 16th through the last Friday in April, which is basically the off cycle for the general trout regulations. So we maintain the five fish during the regular trout season and catch and release after that. Now to go over the additional six public recommendations that the department has written ISORs for and accepted. There were 54 public recommendations. Of these, six of them the department has written ISORs for. The in yellow there is the individuals or the group that has put forward that regulation. First one was Alameda Creek and tributaries. Basically, the entire Alameda Creek drainage is currently open. Here's Alameda Creek drainage. It's currently open to angling last Saturday in April through November 15th with a five fish bag limit. This is a steelhead area. The little yellow triangles there indicate dams, but the Alameda Creek Alliance is doing a lot of work in that drainage to try to get these barriers removed, and you can see some of these have been removed already. Hopefully Anadrus omicus will have an opportunity to once populate this drainage. So we are recommending that the commission consider having the regulation of catch and release only for the period of time. The others are Antelope Lake is in Plumas County. Plumas County Fish and Game Commission has asked the department to delay the opening of trout season in tributaries entering Antelope Lake, and for the period Saturday preceding Memorial Day. Once again, this is to protect the naturally produced fish from Antelope Lake, and it will be inconsistent with other tributaries of these other lakes that you see down there, Bucks, Almanor, Butt Lake, and Davis Lake. We have a significant spawning population that comes from those lakes, and they become very vulnerable. And normally there's still some few fish in there on the last Saturday in April, so we'd like to be consistent and protect those, allow those to get back into the lake setting. Big Chico Creek, this is a Chico area fly fishing group that we currently have an open season from the Bear Hole to the upper boundary of the Big Chico Creek Ecological Reserve from November 15th through February 15th. On several occasions, you've had individuals asking for this to be changed. We initially did not accept that. We went back with the Chico area fly fishers, discussed our concerns regarding steelhead and spring run Chinook that are currently listed, and came up with a compromise or proposed November 1 through April 30th, which will allow them basically 14 days earlier into the season, and gives them all of March and April to fish. And we believe that will still provide the adequate protection for those other species I had mentioned, steelhead and fall chinook, or excuse me, spring chinook. And it is consistent with the Yuba River regulations that also have those species of fish. Don Pedro's, this is a pretty quick one. Don Pedro Recreational Area, there is a closure in the upper portion of Moccasin Creek during this fall-winter period to protect returning lake salmon, Chinook salmon, that were introduced for the inland program. We are no longer doing that. We are no longer, therefore, those regulations are no longer necessary to prevent the harvest of those fish. Initially, the idea was these fish were coming back. We might be able to get some gravid females and males to be able to take eggs there on the hatchery, but it didn't appear to work. We're just doing a put-and-grow fishery now with the Chinook salmon there. The Napa River, this is presented to you by the Napa County Resource Conservation District. The Napa River we've been doing some carcass surveys there and some Chinook surveys there, and the current regulations, the Napa River is open fishing from the Lincoln Bridge to the Trancas Bridge, I guess, and the proposal is to extend the closure to the Oakville Crossroad Bridge, which is an additional 16 miles. This will, in recent studies, we've seen anywhere from 300 to 600 Chinook spawning in that area, so we feel that that specific area during spawning should be protected. The additional regulation on the Napa is the low flow closure regulation. It proposes to replace the Russian River gauge to use the Napa River gauge. If you're familiar with the low flow closures, those are as certain times of year when the flows are so low, we close portions of rivers, so allow the salmon to be able to, or steelhead to be able to migrate up if they're possible. Historically, we were using the Russian River gauge for the Napa. We didn't have a good gauge on the Napa, and there's two different drainage systems. So even though the Russian might be flowing high, the Napa might be flowing low. So basically, this is an attempt to make sure that the conditions are reflected in the low flow, and with the Napa River gauge, it makes it very easy. The Truckee River. I'm sure that Ms. Gustafson is interested in this. The Truckee River and tributaries, there are several different regulation changes here, but which was brought on by the Tahoe Truckee fly fishers, with the common goal of trying to clarify and trying to simplify the regulations. The department's current Truckee River regulations have seven different segments, varied sport fish regulations. We want to reduce that down to five. We want to reduce some of the bag limits from a 15-inch minimum down to a 14, which is two-fish bag limit, which is consistent statewide with other minimum size limit. And also, certain areas of the Truckee system will stay the same, and we will be implementing a couple other, or actually proposing a couple other, not closures, but reduce gear restrictions and reduce bag limits on areas of Martis Creek and Prosser Creek. And I have I needed this to get it clear in my mind, because the Truckees, as bad as the Owens, as bad as the Smith and others. So what you have on the left-hand side is how it currently is, and each color is a different stretch and different regulation on the truckee. And if there's no color on the graph, it is general trout seasons. So the left is currently, the right is what is proposed. So you have that area by Fanny Bridge there in red. Then you go all the way through the truckee, which is your basic 5 and 10. Then you hit into your blue, which is then, I think it's artificials, two fish, 14-inch minimum. The pink or the red there is that one area that the fly fishing community has. We've got about three in the state right now that specifically states fly fishing, not artificials. That's one of them. We're continuing. We felt that changing that is not warranted at this time, and there's a lot of public pressure to keep that. The areas from Prosser Creek Reservoir down and Martis Creek go into the 14-inch two-fish bag limit artificials, and it also extends past all the way to the state line now as compared to what was actually in place right now, 196E, the green line that goes to Grays Creek. So we would extend that regulation of 14-inch minimum two fish all the way to the state line, which will allow us to consider those areas for the wild trout and catch and release program. So we still feel that there's a opportunity to take, and it also is produces several different opportunities for anglers to do different types of fishing. That concludes what the department has proposed based on the public recommendations, and I won't go over what we have done in August, but I'm here for any questions you may have.
Okay. I had a couple quick questions, if that's
sure.
Okay. Because I'm still fairly new to this. Do you respond, does each person who's commented, because we've received all these comments, receive a written response from the department? Or do they get the whole package?
They don't get the whole package. It will be available on our final statements.
Okay.
That will go over each individual proposal and whether we accepted it or rejected it and why we rejected it.
Mm-hmm.
I am trying to develop some type of communications to get that out. And a lot of times, quite frankly, is that when anglers, the first time an angler proposes a regulation, he or she may not know if that regulation has been accepted unless they're watching the website, looking at what the initial statements have been forwarded, or they just wait to the regulation booklet comes out. And I think we owe it to the anglers who have spent time and provided us input. We should probably get this back to them. And it is, like I said, it's about 54 public proposals right now, so it's not a large package. And I believe that would go a long way in terms of educating the public of why we didn't go forward with a certain
I think,
regulations.
Because I think your responses are excellent, and I also want to commend the public for submitting ideas, some of which have come to us through our public meetings. We have responded. The department has looked at these, responded many times with accept with modification and other.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like these people to know that they really do make a difference and solicit their continued input into the process. I know the Fly Fishing Club in Truckee is going to be very thankful to you for clarifying some of those issues, and they talked to me at length about it when I was up there meeting with them. So I really do want to continue to have the public feel that they are heard and we respond. There was one comment also I had a question on.
Sure.
The Department of Water and Power wanted us to close to all angling Howey Reservoir.
Oh, Howey Reservoir, yes.
Howey.
Yes, that one.
But you're not recommending that.
Well, no, we're not recommending that.
Question is mainly, why did they want it closed completely?
There's a issue of national security there,
okay.
Or homeland security.
Okay.
And what they would like the department to do is close Howey Reservoir to fishing all year. And that was also brought up at the Altauscher meeting.
Mm-hmm.
What we have decided to do was to incorporate those into the general regulations. Mm-hmm. And most of that area can be fenced off by the water district. So What we've done is taken off the special regulations, which is, I think it's a two fish bag limit for mm-hmm. bass and others, that it falls within the general regulation. So it's their responsibility to, you know, if they want to close that portion of the reservoir off.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We have...
Good morning, Commissioners. Marcy Remke with the Department's Marine Region. Just a few quick comments on the marine public proposals that were received. We evaluated the 39 proposals received by the Commission either at its early August meeting or prior to that in written form. And the Department is recommending acceptance in part of two of those proposals that you heard. And the department would like to thank the commission staff for posting the summary of comments received and the department's responses. That's been very helpful for people who have called looking for that information. The first of the two items that the department is recommending accepting in part regards to crab thieving that was brought to you by many recreational fishermen from the North Coast. The department has developed proposed amendments to Section 2980 that would make it unlawful to remove crabs from another person's traps unless that person had written permission on them from the actual owner of the trap. In looking at this public proposal, the department proposes actually that we apply that provision to all crustacean traps, so it would also apply to hoop nets for lobster, for example, because the section is structured to apply generally to all crustaceans. So the department is recommending accepting that in part. The second item that we looked at and decided to accept was regarding the opening dates for the sport dungeness season. Right now the season opens on different dates in two different parts of Northern California, and the department agrees with the public comment provided that the actual language of the regulation is somewhat confusing. It's like after the first Tuesday in this, so we agreed that we could clarify that language. And now we're proposing that the opening date language be modified so that in Del Norte County, Mendocino County, and Humboldt counties, the opening date would be the last Saturday in November, and for other places in the state, the opening date would be the first Saturday in November. And those dates would be in keeping with the Commission's policy on opening dates for all fishing and hunting activities, which gives a preference for Saturday openers. Thank you.
Okay. All right, public testimony. Richard Tipton, Bob Osborne, Steve Crook, and Jim Martin.
Can I go last?
Bob Osborne, Steve Crook, Jim Martin, and Mr. Tipton.
My name is Bob Osborne. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm speaking on behalf of United Anglers of Southern California, the largest recreational angler association in Southern California. I would like to address the three proposals by Tom Raftikin that were on the rejection list. I am okay with the PFMC taking the lead on albacore bluefin. Bob Fletcher yesterday gave the commission assurance the PFMC would be instituting bag limits on these fish. I asked the commission's support for the California representative to move for those limits. The PFMC is not taking action on sharks. The sharks are almost exclusively unique to California among the PFMC states. They are in the federal plan largely because of sharing the resource with Mexico. If anything does happen with the sharks, it will probably need to continue to originate here. These sharks are likely in trouble and heavily targeted by both recreational and commercial interests. Establishing more restrictive limits for recreational anglers on makos and threshers will help ensure the use of these fish by recreationals is recreational in nature and will also help to spread the resource around for other recreational users. Virtually the same arguments from the next topic also apply to these sharks. calico bass. Implementing slot limits, more restrictive bag limits on calico bass is good for conservation and will help grow larger fish by allowing large, greater survival rates. In turn, California efforts to move to ecosystem management by providing more natural populations of fish with age classes filled out. In addition, there is no commercial fishing currently on calico bass. The department needs to get away from the fallacious assumptions of the past that the best use of the calico resource is as many 12 and a quarter inch bass as possible. This is not the best recreational use of the resource. That type of management has been proved wrong time and time again, from trout in the Sierras to redfish on the East Coast. The economic value of East Coast redfish has exploded since the advent of slot limits. It's the biggest saltwater fish story of the last decade. I have fished that fishery myself about 20 days in the past 3 years, and I am impressed beyond words. And those slot limits were put in with a great deal of resistance for fishermen when they did it. Today, there is no fisherman on the East Coast that would get rid of them. This is not MSY harvesting. It is what I call MEY harvesting, maximum economic yield. Further, it moves decisively towards the objectives dreamt of by MPA proponents. Not only that, but we have many examples demonstrating that it actually works. USC has conducted several surveys on this topic. We have discussed this with CPFV owners, and in both cases found high agreement. Our angler surveys time and time again, whether conducted on the internet or in membership mailings, come back with 80% support or more. The department needs to abandon its schizophrenic ways. All it does is inflame the differences between users and non-users. They need to actually start putting some emphasis on solutions that supports the idea that conservation can be good for business. I'd like to quickly address some of the items on the list here for the calico bass. It says there's no biological reasons to suggest putting a slot limit in. Well, from the perspective of MSY management, that's true. But you have to put your political blinders on and ignore that you don't have any ecosystem objectives or any objectives through the MLPA. Two, Tom Raftikin said that he wanted to catch big fish. Already, the vast majority of anglers catching large calico bass release them. But because these fish are so long-lived and so low-growing, a small minority of those who do keep them prevent large numbers of them from being there. I spent several years back in the 70s working on a CPFV that probably caught more calico bass than any other CPFV at Catalina, certainly, and probably San Clemente Island and Santa Barbara Island. The department is aware that some people wish to take and keep trophy bass. We recognize that and would probably support a one fish limit over certification as long as somebody held maybe a special permit to limit that to people that really strongly desire that. I'll quickly try to wrap up here.
You've gone well over yours. We started the timer after, so you're well over your time slot.
Okay. Just calico bass is the best fish to start with in Southern California, and sharks are another good one. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to make a comment if I would. I'd like to ask the department about the shark issue. I have not been hearing anything from the department about the viability of current populations of makos and threshers. And I'd like to request that the department bring that. We don't have to do this now, But I'd like to discuss these, both those two sharks and the calico bass slot limit issue, because I too am a devotee of the redfish recovery, which is perhaps the most stunning recovery of any fishery in the United States that I've ever witnessed. And I'd like to take a look at both of those things at the MRC, if and when we ever hold another MRC, assuming we can get done with the business that's precluding us from doing that. So I would like very much to do that. One of the things that I think is going to be important for us to look at very carefully is the Mako and Thresher shark event. I don't know if you're aware, but there is a by my way of thinking, absolutely disgusting television program that is currently on called Shark Hunters. It is nauseating to a sport fisherman like myself to watch these guys being Mr. Macho and screaming and yelling over the death of these sharks. It's the damnedest thing, frankly, I've ever seen, and it, to me, brings disrespect to sport fishing. I have no doubt that because of that program running on television, we are going to be getting some significant concern from the public. I'm probably not alone about the viability of that, of the state of those fisheries. I think we ought to get a little jump on that.
Okay. Mr. Crook?
President Flores and commissioners, my name is Steve Crook. I'm a retired marine biologist with 37 years experience in the department in the marine region. I'm speaking today to support the department's position opposing the United Anglers proposal to establish a slot limit for kelp bass as well as reduce the kelp bass limit to 5. I believe that without a significant amount of biological work on the effect of slot limits on kelp bass, the commission should not modify the current management strategy of a 12-inch minimum size limit. The 12-inch size limit offers adequate protection for the kelp bass resource, so bag limits for this species have been imposed to distribute fish more fairly among anglers. The question to you on bag limits should be, does this need to be changed based on data that you might have from SURFS or some other recreational survey? I would now like to address the two issues based on my knowledge, my personal knowledge, and the knowledge I gained working with the department on kelp bass. First, I would like to look at slot limits. As you may be aware, in the 1950s, the department conducted research on kelp bass, which eventually led to the publication of the Kelp Bass Bulletin in 1963. It's Bulletin 122, and it's available on the internet, or if you can find a copy, you're lucky. One of the recommendations of the study was to impose a size limit on kelp bass at 12 inches. The commission did so in 1959 after imposing limited increases starting with 10.5 inches in 1953. The objective of the 12-inch size limit was to produce the maximum harvest measured in total biomass and also provide the maximum number of kelp bass. Interestingly, the same goal of maximum biomass could also be achieved if the limit had been set at 13 inches, but the number of fish harvested would have been smaller due to the natural mortality which occurred over the one-year period necessary for those fish to grow to 13 inches. The second issue I would like to address is the request for a reduced bag limit. Since the Kelp Bass Bulletin didn't look at bag limits, I examined the SURFS data for 2005. It showed that reducing the bag limit to 5 fish would result in a 12% decline in the number of fish landed. Now keep in mind, these would be legal fish that could have been landed without harm to the population because they were protected by the minimum size limit. United Anglers has apparently recommended changes they seek based on the perception the kelp bass fishery is overexploited and needs additional protection to provide a quality fishery while allowing limited take. I would challenge them to show any data which suggests that over the long run, the fishery is in trouble. Data from MRFs and SURFs for the past 25 years shows the catches vary from year to year but generally stay within the 325,000 to 700,000 fish range. While some may point out that CPFV catches have fallen since the 50s, one must remember there were a few private boaters back then, and the number of boats of their catch now often equals the number of CPF anglers. Recruitment appears to be fairly constant. When I started in 1967, the industry was complaining about the great number of short fish. Skippers today still acknowledge there are large numbers of short fish, but they look at this as an advantage because they know that recruitment is steady and there are plenty of shorts around. One thing that needs to be carefully evaluated is the buildup of large kelp mass if a slot limit is imposed. You could conceivably get into a situation where the majority of fish are over 18 inches and not harvestable. Is this a wise use of the public resource? With regard to slot limits in general, they're appropriate for fish which spawn later in life and can be safely released. White sturgeon is a classic example of this. However, the slot limit was established after scientific analysis based on spawning size, not the suggestion of a group of anglers. Kelp bass start spawning at 3 years of age, which allows them to spawn three times before they're taken at the 12-inch size limit. As an alternative to the slot limit, United Anglers might consider recommending moving the size limit to 13 inches. This would provide the same biomass of fish while providing the angler with a better quality fish, a bet of fewer in numbers because of additional years of mortality. As previously mentioned, bag limits are generally imposed on a fishery to limit the size limit to ensure fairness. As a biologist, this type of decision is outside the scope of my expertise. However, given that the resource is currently doing well with the 10-fish bag limit, I believe the reduction to 5 fish is not warranted as fewer legal fish would be harvested. Thank you for listening to my comments today.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin, followed by Mr. Tipton.
Thank you, President Flores and members of the commission. My name is Jim Martin. I'm with the Recreational Fishing Alliance. And in general, we're very supportive of the department's recommendations on the sport fishing regs. There are a couple things that we need to do some work on. We support the crab regulation that makes it a violation to disturb someone's pots, but the department has changed our proposed language to talk about disturbing the crustaceans, and I think they're trying to apply this to all the different species that you'd use a pot for. The problem is as we read it, the way that the department has written it, you'd have to actually catch somebody taking the crabs out of the pot. And what we're trying to do is make it a violation to disturb the pots in the first place. And we accept the department's recommendation that they not be a crab pot registry with numbers and all that kind of thing, leaving it up to the discretion of the angler to mark his pot. And if I come up on a pot and it doesn't have my name on it, there should be no confusion about me not messing with that pot. The other thing we'd like to recommend is that on the Golden Gate Fishermen's Association proposal, that there be a single bag limit for crabs, whether or not you're on a party boat or a private boat. As it stands now, there's a differential. If I buy a license and I go on a party boat, I can only have 6. And the reasons were given was some old historical battle between the recreational and the commercial crabbers, but that's a long time ago, and I don't see anybody here from the commercial industry opposed to this idea. They're less than 1% of the crabs are taken recreationally. There's no biological reason for this rule, and so we strongly urge you to support that proposal by Golden Gate Fishermen's Association and RFA. The last thing is on sturgeon regulations. Everyone I've talked to supports the annual bag limit on sturgeon of 3. That's plenty of fish for anybody. And we think that'll take care of a lot of poaching problems. But the narrowing of the slot limit down to the extent that they have seems extreme. And I think you're really taking care of the problem with the annual bag limit. I think that we'd like to recommend either modifying that, you know, a narrow slot limit. Maybe that's a good idea. But I think that what the department's proposed is a little too extreme. So thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, also, I have some proposed language for that crab thing that Jim DeMartini sent. I don't know if all the commissioners have received it yet.
We got that letter, yeah.
You've got that
We've
letter?
We've got that letter, yeah.
So that's what we're proposing.
That's your proposal? Okay, yeah. We've got that letter came in just before the commission meeting, so I'll distribute that after the meeting.
Thank you.
Mr. Tipton.
Rich.
Next time I'll bring me a desk. My name is Richard Tipton. I'm from Northern California. I represent the Bay Area fishermen, all of them. I have fished for sturgeon for 43 years. I've taken a quite fondness and respect for that fish. And I understand the problems the Department of Fish and Game have and the commissioners with budgets and enforcing the law, but you also have a problem getting accurate data to go by. And this is one of the problems, one of the reasons why I come here. I have volunteered my services many times with the Department of Fish and Game, make sure there's accurate data that is supplied to you so you know what kind of legislation to pass and how to administer our fish. The fish belongs to all of us. And there's been, as I said, a lot of inaccurate data that has been relayed to you folks, and has been very inaccurate. We've tried our best to work in with different parties, but believe me, I am here also to protect our enhancement and to protect our fish. And one of the things that, if we don't watch out what we can do, we can regulate ourselves out to where all we will have then will be poachers out there taking our fish. That is one of our number one problems that we have with our fish. A lot of you folks may not realize this, but if you can catch a 100-pound sturgeon that has 15 pounds of caviar in it, that fish can net you $20,000. That's a very strong market out there. Okay, the price of caviar has increased tremendously over the past few years because it's become international law. You cannot transfer caviar from one country to the other. One of the things that has prompted this is over in the Caspian Sea, where we're fortunate to have the white sturgeon, the same sturgeon we have on the West Coast, the poachers have just about wiped out that fish. The white sturgeon has been on this earth for 175 million years. And with our help, it's going to be here another 175 million years. But I do not like to see over-regulations to jeopardize the desire for the sports fishermen in Northern California to lose their desire and their want to go out and fish for this magnificent fish. I love to see the families out there. I love to see everybody out there enjoying themselves. But I do not think the punch cards, and I do not think that the tags are necessary. We do not need to be bookkeepers for the Department of Fish and Game. It's very easy to tell what's going on. Every month, party boats, guides, anybody with a license from the state of California or the U.S. Coast Guard has to send in monthly reports on our creel counts, how many hours we spend on the water, where we fish, what fish were retained. You can read in the newspapers every week from every paper in the entire Bay Area. Does that mean my time's up already?
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. You can read it in the newspapers and you can tell how our fishery is doing. Last year was the best fishing we have ever had in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Delta system in 43 years. My boat alone caught 8 times its normal amount of sturgeon fishing. Back in January, when it was first announced that there was only 10,000 fish that was left in our system, your sturgeon fishermen and everybody in the business, your good sturgeon fishermen, were all shocked. We just couldn't believe this. At the meetings in Vallejo, I presented documents that had showed that where my boat alone had caught 408 fish. Now, I'm not counting all the fish my boat kept. Don't get me wrong. I'm counting total fish caught, undersized fish, legal-sized fish, and oversized fish. But it just tells you how strong our fishery really is. Our fishery has no problem except for one thing, and that's the poachers. But your good fishermen, your good sports fishermen out there are the only eyes and ears of the game wardens have now to keep an eye on these poachers and keep them regulated. As I said, it's a very, very profitable business. And we're here to do everything that we can to ensure the safety of our sturgeon. But I just want to let each one of you know, after the 10-inch slot size was imposed, everybody had to catch a fish within this slot size. Okay, that's 10 inches. What happened to the fishermen? 90% of them stayed home. Why try? And that's what happened. I was very fortunate April 8th of this year to take out some of the higher gentlemen that have been with the Department of Fish and Game. Some been with them for over 30 years. I've showed them with the electronics, the new modern electronics that are out there. Fish on the bottom. Fish were jumping around us. We were able to bring 7 fish aboard the boat. It was a fantastic day of fishing. One of the gentlemen's name was Banky Curtis. I don't know if you gentlemen know him. Very nice person. Very nice. He's fished with me a few times. But I also had five other gentlemen on the boat that same day with the Department of Fish and Game throughout California. And the next day, I had the privilege of fishing with a couple of the commissioners to show them the same thing with the modern electronics that we have today, the fantastic world of electronics, and it will show you the fish. It will show you the fish on the bottom. It will show you their as they're commuting. It will show you fish mark around, I mean, as they're moving around. This is the kind of data that you need is accurate, not using methods that were used 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago to try and calculate your fish today. Let's take advantage of this electronic era and keep an eye on it. But I had the fortune of fishing a couple of gentlemen here on the commission, too, and we had a great time. We did the same thing. We caught seven fish. We saw lots of fish on the bottom. It was a beautiful day, and we saw lots of fish jumping around us. But with today's electronics, we can get accurate information. Believe me, we do not want this fish overfished either. But your good sportsmen, are the ones that are not your cause for any shortage. There is no shortage. And with your permission, I would like to give each and every one of you on the commission a tally of my creel count last year. We'll show you that my boat alone caught 570 sturgeon. And this is when we're supposed to have an emergency. And as I say, the accurate data that you need, they came out in January and said there's only 10,000 fish in our system. We knew that that was wrong. And then after the closer, emergency closer, and after the good sports fishermen stopped going because there's no challenge for them to go. Who wants to go? Now they're proposing that you have to catch a fish in this size. My proposal and the proposal for most fishermen is leave well enough be. And let's do the same method. If they want to use antiquated ways of trying to get data on fish, let them do it in March when we have migrating fish going through our system. They say they can't come up where the fish are. Sturgeon is the world's largest freshwater fish. They grow from the moment they are born to the moment they die. They can grow forever because they do not have a backbone system. They have a cartilage-type system back. I'm trying to talk fast. I know there's other people here who want to talk too. But anyway, it's a very fascinating fish. I would like to give each member of the commission a copy of my creel census. You can also tell here how many fish was retained, how many fish was released, how many small fish. We caught over 350 undersized fish to tell you that our fishery is very, very strong, and it's going to be strong forever as long as we can keep the fishermen out there and keep their desire to go out there and fish. We lost 90% of our good fishermen after the 10-inch slot size went in. And this opened the grounds to nothing but poaching. As you read in the paper, nine poachers were apprehended. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, that's nine out of about 200 more. And they're out there still to this day. I do not like the 14-inch slot size that they're proposing. This will kill your fishery. It was a financial hardship on all your bait shops, charter boats, boat salespeople, and everything else during this 10-inch. It cost me personally around $45,000. But just to let you know real quickly, you don't have to worry about Rich and Lucky Strike within the next few weeks. I'm retiring from chartering. I'm here for the sake of the good sports fishermen there in Northern California. Okay?
Thank you very much. You can hand to Mr. Fisher there. Okay.
I have a question for the department on that. I don't know the extent to which you're aware of what is one of the things that has caused the largest brouhaha that we have experienced recently was the supposed diminution of the sturgeon that were up there and the lack of efficacy for the count. I think most people who thought about that were pretty convinced that that was a miscount, rather of some significance. What are we doing? What is the department currently doing to either alter its procedures for counting, do something like Mr. Tipton's commenting on, using different methodologies, perhaps more modern methodologies? In other words, what is the current state of that? Perhaps not now. Maybe now is not the time to talk about this, maybe some other time. But this is a very important thing because I think we took a fairly significant, we meaning the department and the commission, took a fairly significant body blow on the ridiculousness, apparent ridiculousness of that count.
Well, it wasn't a miscount. I mean, the current survey we all recognize needs to be enhanced. It was not designed to be a comprehensive. The data it generates is commonly misunderstood. That was adult fish. 10,000 wasn't the total population. People get that confused all the time. We recognize there are flaws in that overall survey method. We're revamping it to...
Yeah, but Sankey, wasn't it true that... I'm sorry to interrupt, but wasn't it true that that was brought to the commission as an emergency situation?
Well, the
in other words, if what you're saying now makes me think the department has, in fact, changed its mind about that situation. In other words, it was very unfortunate that all of that was brought to the department as an emergency situation when, in fact, it was an error. Do we admit that it was an error?
No. We don't know. The issue is we're not certain. I'm not as concerned that it was imminent as our folks thought it was, but we would have been remiss based on the information we have.
Oh, I understand that, Sankey. You have to take action based on what it is, your current protocols. I'm talking about the efficacy of those counting protocols.
You know, they have very wide error bars. I mean, they're not a precise and probably not very accurate survey, but it was all we had, and that's what we based. That was the best available
science. So my question is, are we changing our protocol?
Yes.
We'll talk about it. I want to talk about this then. Some of the time, I need a great deal more information on this to feel good about this. Because when you roll a hand grenade into a fishing community the way we did, we want to be certain that if we are uncomfortable with how we did that or the information that was generated on which we made our decisions to do that, how then very specifically, it's incumbent upon this commission to know, very specifically, what are we going to alter so that we don't do that in the future? That's all I mean.
And we're doing that. That's a subject where we would have to bring our lead scientists on that. This is not the venue for it. I think that's a great for the Al Touch or even whatever venue. We are modifying it. It does not change our overall concern for the fishery. We have, as you've heard of the pod, we have a significant collapse going on in the Delta, and sturgeon are an integral part of that. Based on that and the increase in poaching and that's clearly going on, whether the slot limit is certainly debatable, that the department has offered a range. We can talk about which range works best. But we are adamant about a tag or a report card. That is the only way we're going to really start trying to see if we can control this poaching. And part of the reason is the gentleman here clearly expressed, it is part of it is the technology. These new electronics, they can find these fish. They're very vulnerable. So that adds to the risk, actually. And so this is really, from our point of view right now, is more about how do we rationally control the poaching going on. I can have our enforcement folks. We've got a bunch of activity going on. They can give you probably a confidential update. It's getting worse, not better.
Well, especially if the courts aren't enforcing the penalties.
Yeah, exactly, President Florence. That's absolutely true.
And unfortunately, one of the common dilemmas of regulated fishing and hunting activities is, unfortunately, the honest folks are usually ones that have to bear the burden of trying to catch and prevent the bad guys. That is just an inherent hazard that we try and avoid all the time because it's not fair. Unfortunately, our tools are limited. We think a tag system is an inconvenience, absolutely, but we think it's an important way to start trying to control and identify illegally taken fish.
Well, Mr. Forrest, if we could, let's visit this.
Yes.
Now is not the time, but let's visit this in a more specific way. I mean, I have those electronics on my boat, and yes, I know exactly what's under the boat and what it's doing and where it's going.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Better put my glasses on. Have a few more. John Duffy, Bob Fletcher, and Paul Weakland.
Good morning, President Flores, members of the commission.
Oh, yeah.
John Duffy, yeah. And I have a same question as Commissioner Gustafson earlier had relative to the fate of public recommendations. clearly, and I had a partial answer to that when the department mentioned or thanked the commission for posting these comments. Even though I'm a frequent visitor to the commission's website, I had not detected that that information has been posted, so I will go and do that homework. But clearly they've rejected, the department has rejected the two proposals that I made relative to the abalone regulation changes, and without knowing why they rejected them, then I can't make any further comments. And just as a historical note, relative to the differential bag limit on Dungeness crabs on sport boats and CPFVs, that differential bag limit was solely to recognize the difference in fishing power. The regulations provide that a CPFV may have up to 60 commercial size crab traps to provide crabs for its customers. A private boat might have 3 or 4 or 5 traps. That was the only difference. It wasn't a difference between commercial and sport. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fletcher?
Good morning, President Flores and members of the Commission. Bob Fletcher, President of the Sport Fishing Association of California, representing about 150 commercial passenger fishing vessels operating in Southern California. I'm here to speak on two issues. First, to support the recommendations of United Anglers relative to Thresher and Mako's. I think that one is more than enough. There's always a concern about long-lived, slow-growing, low fecundity species such as the sharks, and so we would support their comments. Relative to calico bass, we're going to have to differ with United Anglers. We support and have in front of this commission, as well as the Pacific Fishery Management Council, the use of science to manage fisheries, and we support the department's efforts. We would encourage the department to look at the calico bass resource, provide this commission and the public with the best available information about the status. We believe that the calico bass resource, which is extremely important to my industry, is fully exploited but appears to be maintaining. We see a lot of short fish, which as Steve Crook said, and I support Steve Crook's comments, we believe the stock is fully exploited but healthy. We could support an increase in the minimum size limit to 13 inches, but until such a time as there's some scientific information that would lead to believe that the stock is over-harvested and needs the kinds of protections that a reduced bag limit would indicate, we can't support a reduction in the bag limit. And my final comment has to do with the slot limit. I know in freshwater fisheries, the slot limit is a very valuable tool at times. However, as Mr. Crook indicated, the calico bass is a different critter, and we believe that the slot limit may not be the appropriate management tool for calico bass. One last comment. I heard through some enforcement personnel that if a slot limit was adopted, this commission or the department would probably have to prohibit filleting of all calico bass, which would be a real hardship for my crew members who rely on the filleting of calico bass as an important part of their livelihood. So I hope that the commission listens to the comments of Mr. Crook, who has 37 years with the department, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. We have made proposals on several occasions properly and timely, yet we do not see it reflected in your regulations or responses that the harvesting of abalone should be allowed south of San Francisco in the counties of San Francisco, San Mateo, Santa Cruz, Monterey, and San Luis Obispo County. We have been completely ignored. There is nothing in your proposals that reflect this public proposal. What's the problem? Where's the malfunction? This is deceitful.
Thank you, Mr. Weakland. Okay, thank you all for your testimony. The question, Sankey, when you mentioned 10,000 adult fish, I remember it being presented to us in that way. But what does the department consider an adult fish?
I think that was fish in the slot limit. Let me start over. I don't recall exactly. You have those reports. We provided numerous ones. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
I don't really recall, but my impression was it was, I thought it was over 46, but I'm guessing. No, I don't recall. But it was not the total population. It was it was a subset of the sturgeon population.
Mr. Tipton, just out of curiosity, do you have any ideas of what sort of population you think is out there based on your experience?
Yes, Mr. Flores.
Come up to the mic.
The newspaper said there was 10,000 total sturgeon in our system, and that was changed after the slot emergency went in to 10,000 in the slot size, which would represent roughly 10 times more than was originally reported when it said 10,000 only in our system. That's when the commissioners asked you to go back to the public and ask for public input. I'm sorry, Mr. Flores, what was your input?
Based on your experience and years of fishing, what do you think the population is in total?
I think the population above the Pittsburgh area, the saltwater area, is well over a million fish. Well over a million, not 10,000.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you all. I guess we're going to hear more testimony on this and make adoptions in Santa Monica, but were there further public testimony in Santa Monica or Redding? You want to get up? Okay. All right, thank you all. We'll move along to item number 18, receipt of public testimony and proposed changes to the recreational ground fish regulations for 2007-2008, and department update on the management measures adopted by the PFMC at its June 11, 16, 2006 meeting. Marcy?
Good morning, commissioners. The proposal in front of you that's slated for adoption at your November meeting would make several changes to the Title 14 regulations that currently apply for recreational groundfish fishing in state waters. The primary purpose of the package is to conform the state's regulations for state waters to the new federal groundfish regulations that apply to waters 3 to 200 miles offshore. Those were adopted by the PFMC at its June meeting, and the expectation is those regulations will be effective by January 1 for federal waters. So that's our target date on the state side as well. The federal conformance pieces of the package in front of you, first, there will be expanded fishing seasons and depths in 4 out of the 5 management areas of the state. And this is based on improved stock assessments that came back for some of our nearshore stocks. On page 3 of the initial statement of reasons that you have in your binder, you'll see a summary table of the fishing seasons and depth constraints that will apply for all areas of California. And the expansion will result in no less than 6 months of fishing time and as many as 10 months in the far south, and no less than 30 fathoms as a maximum depth for all areas. So there's been a considerable expansion in some areas as a result of the more favorable assessments. The proposed regulations would continue to prohibit retention of cow cod, canary, and yellow-eye rockfish, the shelf species which have been declared overfished, continued no retention. Ling cod will remain 24 inches with 2 fish statewide. There is an increase to the greenling bag limit from 1 fish to 2 fish, and that's based on some underage in terms of the tracking of the catches against the state's allowable harvest level. The sculpin fishery will increase now to 12 months for areas south of Point Conception, and that's resulted from favorable stock assessment that will allow fishing all year round. Sand dabs, the exception to the federal rules for sand dabs, will continue to apply at all depths and in all areas for 12 months. And the other piece of conformance that will continue is the closure at the Cordell Banks, prohibiting the take of groundfish. The regulatory package in front of you also contains items that are up to the commission. They aren't conformance pieces. These are items that either the commission has done in the past relating to ground fish that were kind of beyond what the council had done. And so these are things that totally were up to you at one point in time and that are either already on the books and that the council has not done. It's kind of not an issue for them. So I'd just like to give you a brief overview of what those things are. The regulations would continue to align the fisheries for sheephead and ocean whitefish with the seasons for groundfish and also all of the greenlings as well. And the reason for this is that those species, while they're not technically a federal groundfish, they are very closely intertwined with groundfish. They swim around in the same areas. They get caught with the same gear. You can't cleanly target those fish. So we've always, on the state side, managed those fish in accordance with the groundfish complex because we have concerns that there would be bycatch and interaction with the rockfish that are managed under certain levels. So if a season is set at 10 months for groundfish, on the state side, our rules conform to that by setting a 10-month season for those species as well. So that would continue. The next thing we'd also propose to continue is the 12-month exception for leopard shark fishing, so that when groundfish is closed, if you're fishing in an enclosed bay anywhere in California that's designated in your regulations, you could continue to fish for leopard shark. That was an exception that anglers had requested the commission, and it was granted a few years back. Additionally, the regulations would continue to prohibit fishing within 10 fathoms of the Farallon Islands. That's something else that's in our regulations right now. There are a few items, actually, that we're recommending the commission eliminate regarding groundfish. And again, these are not conformance pieces. These are solely up to you. There's a finfish transit permit right now in our regulations that is required for people that are transiting with fish aboard that are going from one management region to another. And we're recommending elimination of that requirement. At this time, things have changed since we originally instituted that requirement back in 2001. We had a lot different season structures throughout the state. At that time, it was a necessary requirement that we really regulate the transit of fish between the areas. That's become less of a concern under the new regulatory scheme. The second thing we're recommending are a few changes for clarity and enforceability with reference to the California Rockfish Conservation Area. Right now, there is a provision that requires that if you're fishing in an area where groundfish is closed, either in depth that's too deep or in a closed month, you are constrained to one hook and 6 ounces of weight. And that's regardless of what else you're fishing for, but then there are numerous exceptions. And so we've proposed eliminating that requirement because it's... again, it's not a conformance item, and it's been difficult to enforce, and it's somewhat unclear. Then there are two other items that the commission has seen fit to provide in its regulations that we're asking for you to reaffirm at your adoption hearing to ensure that you do want to continue with these two things. And the first one is the shore-based exception that the commission provides for recreational anglers that fish from shore for groundfish. So they're allowed to fish for 12 months of the year from shore to take any species of groundfish that are otherwise closed. So if the season for groundfish is 6 months in one area, the shore fishermen still fish during that closed period. So we're asking the commission to, again, reaffirm this particular provision because it's solely at your discretion. And the second one is the similar and related provision for diving and spearfishing, where anglers that are fishing using spear gear from a boat also can fish outside of that seasonal constraint. And the reason that we're asking you to reaffirm those provisions is, while they certainly seek to afford opportunity for those sectors of the recreational fishery, it does come at some additional cost in terms of offset to the other sectors of the recreational fishery. It somewhat reduces the effectiveness of the closed season. And since everything is kind of modeled around total harvest, it somewhat reduces the effectiveness of the closed fishing season. Finally, based on numerous requests we've received from the public over recent years, the department and the commission staff worked really hard this year to make extensive improvements to the organization of the Title 14 sections regulating ground fish. We did a complete overhaul, and we sure thank the commission staff's assistance on this, and we really look forward to the implementation of the new rules. Thank you.
Thank you. We have testimony from Bob Fletcher and Jim Martin.
Good morning, President Flores and members of the Commission and Commissioner and Department staff. I'm Bob Fletcher, President of the Sport Fishing Association of California, here to represent the 150 or so sport fishing vessels in Southern California. I submitted a recommendation to the department that was rejected. My recommendation was to allow the take of whitefish and sheephead during the January-February time period when sculpin was available. By the way, you heard sculpin had a stock assessment, the first ever stock assessment on sculpin. The season was 3 months long prior to that stock assessment. All of the industry had been telling the department that the sculpin resource was healthy, and the stock assessment verified our point of view. The estimate was that it was at 85% of the unfished level. So sculpin is not a species of concern. Our recommendation was that whitefish and sheephead be allowed in the same waters where sculpin was being harvested. We respect the department's position on this. We understand their concern about the incidental take and mortality of nearshore rockfish. There is some minor association. We appreciate that. We're only here to advise the commission that we will continue to hope that as the nearshore rockfish stocks improve, that this be considered again on an annual basis, because it's very important for my industry, which otherwise has next to no opportunity for those 2 months. So we appreciate it. We will continue to work with the council and the department and hopes that better science is brought to bear to indicate just what that minimum impact on rockfish is that might justify the inclusion of those two species in future years. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Thank you. My name is Jim Martin with the Recreational Fishing Alliance, and I'm here to speak strongly in favor of the shore angling and diving exemption. I'm on the groundfish advisory panel to the PFMC, and it was actually my understanding that we had gotten this exemption into the Federal Register, but we didn't. Oregon has adopted this provision. I don't even want to call it an exemption, because it's part of the opportunity that we can offer with very little impact on the resource. I provided you with a letter that outlined some of the comparisons, 9 metric tons of lingcod caught from shore compared to over 200 metric tons from private boats. So there's about 3.1 million angler trips from shore and pier. To cut that in half or do a 6-month season in my region would eliminate that opportunity with almost no savings that you could pass on to anybody else. Diving, spearfishing represents less than 1% of the total recreational take. They can observe the fish before they shoot them, and they're not going to be taking any overfished shelf species like canaries. So, any questions about that? And rock fishing is great. I just wanted to say that I've been out, and the restrictions have made a lot of positive results out there. Lingcod has been rebuilt completely. I think we had an opportunity to look at a 3 lingcod bag limit this year, and talking to the recreational fishing community, they didn't want it. They felt like, you know, leave well enough alone. 2 is enough for us. So things are looking better. Thank you. Great.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Well, as you know, Jim, lingcod don't freeze. If you freeze them, you wreck them. So you got to eat them fresh. So however long you can keep them. That's the only other way.
Okay. Thank you all. We'll move along to, was there any follow-up in the department? No? Okay. Item number 19, discussion and possible adoption of amendments to Section 53.03, 149, and 149.1, Title 14, regarding non-transferable squid light boat permits, squid permit fees, and revision of light boat logbook forms. Marcy.
Good morning, Commission. The item in front of you regarding squid is slated for adoption today. The package contains three big parts, the first of which is to establish a non-transferable light boat permit class based on criteria that would require submission of a logbook record between January 1st, 2001 and August 27th, 2004. This would be a seventh class of commercial squid permit that the commission issues, and the department anticipates that there may be two qualifiers, although there possibly could be as many as six qualifiers. And this item has been in front of you now for some time. We're ready to move on that. The second big piece of this package entails permit fees. The department is proposing an increase to the squid permit fees for all permit classes in order to bring the revenues more in line with the costs that the department is spending on squid fishery management. And the third big piece is amendments to the existing regulations regarding logbooks and the forms that are used by the operators at sea. This is really just a housekeeping item, but we need to bring our regulations up into compliance with the current forms that are in use. Okay. I'm going to speak primarily on the fee issue, since that's the one that's generated the most discussion. The present fee values for squid permits for 2006, 2007, based on the commission's fees that were adopted in 2004 with the fishery management plan, the current transferable vessel permit fee is just over $2,100. The non-transferable permit fees are set at a lower level, just over $1,000. The vessel permits and the braille permits were at the $2,000 range, and the light boat permits were set at a lower fee level. The other source of revenue to the department from the squid fishery that comes directly from squid fishing activities, the landings tax, you've heard some discussion on this. Again, the commission does not have authority over the landings tax rate. The commission only has authority over the permit fees themselves. Over the past three seasons, the tax revenues have averaged about $245,000 per year to the department. And at the current tax rate, even if the entire squid quota were taken, the total revenue that would come to the department from the landings tax only would be $450,000. Looking at how the squid revenues compare to the department's costs, that was the reason for requesting the fee increase. The bottom line, the department's estimate of cost, all expenditures for squid from 14 different department functions, our best guess is that we're spending approximately $1.37 million per year right now on squid activities. The initial statement, we've prepared a detailed table outlining what these costs come from. This is from all department functions for issuance of permits, for permit appeals, for commission activities, for transfers, permit transfers, for the department's port sampling and monitoring programs, for our record-keeping activities, so on and so forth. So that's the total department-wide estimate of cost for squid fishery management and licensing. Looking at the revenues brought in from squid activities, looking at the 2000, this is just the most recent 3 years, just to provide you a snapshot. The total revenue in 2003 and 04 to the department from all sources that were directly for SQUID, just over $300,000. 04-05, about $288,000, and an increase in 05-06 to $532,000. And that increase, of course, was due to the increased permit fees. But again, it still falls well short of what the department anticipates the or estimates the costs actually are that we are expending for all activities relating to SQUID. So with that average tax revenue of $245,000 and those annual costs, if you were to do the math to calculate back how much each permit would cost to fully cover the $1.37 million, you'd be looking at an average of about $6,500 per permit. There are about 170 permits right now in the fishery, and we'll be considering increasing it maybe by two if you adopt today the additional non-transferable grandfather light boat permit class today. However, that said, that would assume that the commercial fishery would be funding 100% of all of the SQUID fishery management activities. And just as a refresher, with the development of the SQUID fishery management plan, very lengthy stakeholder public process, lots of comments received from several different sectors of the community. Recreational anglers participated, environmental groups participated. So there were other stakeholders involved in that process. So to some degree, attributing 100% of cost to the commercial fishery may or may not be appropriate, depending on how much you might offset for those other sectors. At the June meeting, based on the department's recommendation, the commission agreed to consider the fee range for SQUID permits in the range of $5,000 to $8,000 per SQUID permit. And as you saw just a minute ago, the commission did decide to set the fees at different levels for the different classes of permits. So this range is open for all of the classes of permits. You may decide to set the light boat permits lower, the vessel permits higher, what have you. So you do have that range to work with for all of the classes. Additionally, if we move forward with the non-transferable light boat permit class today, a fee level will need to be set for that particular class of permit. And I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Okay. Public testimony. We'll start off with Paul Weakland, John Duffy, Jim Bunn, Dan Williams, and Jack Bateman.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. The transferable, non-transferable permits. This is creating class structure. You're having second-class citizens in the non-transferable category. I have an analogy. This is Afon land. You have a landowner, property owner. He wants to have a high-maintenance, high retail value of his property, keeps it in high regard. Someone who's renting the property does not have this ambition. They do not care for a high maintenance of the property, because they would then be asked to pay a higher rate of rent, which is happening here, the second-class citizen scenario. So creating these two classes doesn't seem to be amiable or equitable. Thank you. I release the rest of my time to whoever needs it.
Good morning, President Flores, commissioners, staff, and department. I am John Duffy, and speaking today on behalf of seven commercial fishermen on this item. Commissioners Kellogg and Rogers heard my oral testimony at your August 25th meeting, and the rest of you I know have read my detailed written report or written review of the department's initial statement of reasons prepared for this matter. I have no need to restate those comments today. I support establishing a light boat permit for fishermen pursuant to Section 8101 of the code with the proposed qualifying criteria because this will provide access to the small number of 20-year fishermen who have invested in the light boat side of the squid fishery and who did not submit a logbook page during the shortened qualifying window period adopted for light boats in general. Had this option been presented for consideration at your August 27, 2004 meeting, I feel certain it would have been adopted at that time. I would be remiss if I did not ask the Commission to reaffirm its commitment to consider the matter of making all squid grandfather permits transferable. The matter was referred to the Marine Resource Committee in February and hopefully will be on the agenda for your next meeting. On the matter of adjusting permit fees for all commercial squid classes to adequately cover department and commission costs, I ask that you remove this from consideration at this time and refer that to the Marine Resource Committee for an in-depth review and discussion. Thank you for this opportunity to comment and taking the time to consider my thoughts.
Mr. Bunn, Mr. Williams, and Mr. Bateman.
Morning, President Flores, members of the Commission. My name is Jim Bunn, a commercial fisherman in San Pedro. And I kind of question these costs here that Marcy, the department recommended. For instance, it says Fish and Game Commission set squid policy by adopting the FMP supporting regulations and go on in some other language after that, and that's $40,000. Well, the FMP was adopted 2 years ago. I mean, what's all that about? And certainly, the wardens, you got $500,000 worth of wardens worth of enforcement. Well, those wardens are on the salary. They're paid whether they're looking for squid or not. And how do you break this down into our category? I don't know.
But,
I think that if we could get in a subcommittee meeting where you can go through these things and you have some time, I think we could analyze it a little bit better here. The department, if you want to remember, they eliminated over 105 permits when this plan was adopted. Though the boats were not fishing, only 87 boats were the most fishing boats that ever delivered. There was 240-something permits. Well, they were getting $2,500 a piece from these people during the moratorium period that never even fished. So it sounds to me like, you know, they want your cake and eat it too. You don't need permits, but you want a lot of money. After all, this fishery here is the least amount of permits of any of your major fisheries. You got 600-something crab permits, 379 herring permits. These people aren't paying near what we're already paying, $2,000, more than any other fishery. Over $2,000. So it just seems to me that if it costs this much money to police this fishery run this fishery, it seems to me that how much money would it cost to run these other fisheries? Isn't something out of whack here? I won't take any more of your time on it. Any questions?
Thank you.
Hello, commissioners. Hello, staff. My name is Dan Williams. I'm a commercial fisherman. I come before you again regarding the squid light boat grandfather issue. I did present some testimony in Santa Barbara. And the three basic points that I brought up was that there's a tremendous squid license fee increase proposed. Second, the inaccuracies in the ISOR document. And third, primarily my thanks for your moving forward resolve this omission in the squid management plan in hopes that you'll be able to resolve it independently of the other issues pending so it doesn't get drawn out. I unfortunately was unable to prepare this letter for you earlier in which I detail some of my concerns at the current light boat cost issue for the transferable of $500. The non-transferable would be approximately $250. And if you have a license fees between $5,000 and $8,000, you're looking at some 2,000% increase in license fees. As to the ISOR document itself, on page 2, paragraphs, the last paragraph through page 3, it states, the reasons that a non-transferable light boat permit class was not included by the department in the 2000 regulatory options were primarily that no industry member discussed nor identified the need, nor was a criterion identified at that time that was less restrictive than that for the transferable light boat permit. It is important to note also, however, that on and prior to the 2004 adoption hearing, there was no public comment requesting such a class. The squid management plan was primarily adopted in the end of August in 2004. And prior to that, I personally attended the California Fish and Game Commission Marine Subcommittee held July 7th, 2006, where the agenda item 3, squid fishery management regulations for permits, including transferability and 20-year fisherman provisions, was presented, and where I personally presented my concerns about the grandfather clause issue. I also presented my letter dated to the commission July 7th, requesting a category for grandfather permittees. Then I additionally attended the next Marine Subcommittee meeting and brought up my concerns, which was held in, I think it was Port San Luis. And then at the Commission Squid Management Adoption Hearing in Morro Bay, held August 24, 2004, I presented personal testimony, reading into the record my letter to the Commission dated August 24th. And I again requested a Regulation 8101 20-year provision. So I'm hopefully you'll be able to resolve this issue without it dragging on as it had in the past. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, Commissioners. My name is Jack Bateman. I've been a commercial fisherman for 27 years. I just have one question. I don't understand why the squid fishery is the only fishery on the planet that has to pay for all management costs. It seems like discrimination. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Brockman, followed by John Gibbs, Mike Miller, and Diane Plessner-Steele.
Commissioners, long time on being up here. My name is Don Brockman. I represent the Squid Fishermen Association. I was involved in the Squid Advisory Committee, which met the last time in 2002, and actually Mr. Williams was wrong. We did bring up the grandfather clause for the light boats, but the problem was there's no fish tickets. How do you prove that somebody was involved in the fishery? And that's what we kept coming up against with the department. One of the things I noticed, you know, I keep seeing more and more agenda items on squid keep coming up at these commission meetings. In the FMP, we were supposed to set up a squid advisory committee again so that we could settle all this stuff with a group and then come to you guys instead of this back and forth. Seems like every agenda item, there's something about squid. You know, we should have put this to bed a couple of years ago. This permit fee issue is just, it's ludicrous. We talked about this at the adoption 2 years ago. There's just no way the guys can pay for this. Squid is a viable fishery. Always has been. There's no problem with the fishery. But the fishery goes up and down with El Ninos. Every time there's an El Nino, 2 or 3 years, there's no squid. The guys cannot afford to pay this for a permit. I got this from the department a couple days ago. It just shows you the amount for the permit fees for everything in the California for anybody. Squid's paying almost double what any other permit fee is. So I think we're paying our share. We have Diane Plessner with the California Wet Fish Producer Association. We're doing research where the boats are actively involved in that, doing it, you know, pro bono. And I think we're moving on here. But this is an orderly fishery. I like where it is right now, and I'd like to keep it that way. And let's look at the department and find out why we don't have the Squid Advisory Committee, and so that we don't have to keep coming forward with these problems. Thank you for your time.
John goes out fast this time.
Hi, I'm Mike Miller. I'm a light boats. My name is Mike Miller. I have a squid light boat. I'm an owner-operator, and I'm just here to say that I feel that the permit fees are unfair and excessively high that you're proposing. I think they're pretty fair where they're at right now. And I, another point I'd like to question the numbers that the department came up with as far as the cost of enforcement and all that. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you. And Gordon Daly? Is Gordon still here? Okay, you're last. Go ahead, Diane.
Is Gordon?
Gordon's going to go last.
Okay. Oops, wait a minute. No further ado. Good morning, President Flores and members of the Commission. I'm Diane Pleschner Steele, Executive Director of California Wet Fish Producers Association, representing the majority of processors and fishermen in California's wet fish industry. This is basically a reprise of my August 25 comment to the Commission, and the spreadsheets that I'm handing out today are an update of highlighting the landing taxes contributed to the department from the wet fish industry, including anchovy, mackerel, sardines, and market squid. These species contribute a substantial amount of money in landing taxes to the department, close to $1 million a year. And sardines, mackerel, and anchovy are managed actively by the federal government, so they don't incur the extensive management costs generated by squid. And basically, if you take a look at the total wet fish contribution, it's clear that the squid industry, which includes these other species, does pay our way. And I've proposed that the Commission and the Department consider looking at the wet fish industry as a complex in terms of generating the funding necessary to pay for squid management costs. We've also asked the department to revisit their budget for the squid management, fishery management costs, because we think that they've inadvertently double counted for the enforcement. And you'll see on the front page of that, we've questioned, there's a $523,000 enforcement line item. And the top squid FMP cost, $550,000, also includes a $200,000 ticket for enforcement. And on the second page of that, it gives you the formula for how they determine that, where basically this came from the enforcement themselves, estimating that 8% of enforcement costs are generated for squid. And the last page of what I handed out today gives you an average of average ex-vessel costs for squid. And what the department had done based on these costs was based on the last 2 years, which were high-value years because there was virtually no squid worldwide. But the reality, taking a look at an eight-year average ex-vessel, the fishermen receive basically half of what they got last year. And I guess the point to be made there is that this is a dynamic resource. It goes up and down. We're predicting another El Nino this year. And may I finish?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And in any case, the fishermen really just can't afford $6,000 permit fees in perpetuity. In our earlier testimony, we've asked the commission to consider the cooperative research program that we have mounted in participation with the Department of Fish and Game to help offset squid management costs. And we've also asked for a small block of time on a commission agenda so that we could have our principal investigator, Dr. Doyle Hannon,
who was the former senior squid fishery biologist for the department before Dale Sweetnam, who's running our program, and we're working closely with the department to develop an on-the-water program, and we are actually on the water right now. We'd like for Doyle to give you the highlights of that program. And to the degree that we can, we'd like to integrate our cooperative research into the department's program. So in summary, we would appreciate your support to include the full contribution from wet fish as applicable to squid. We would appreciate a time on a future commission agenda so that Dr. Hannon can give you the highlights of our program. And we would appreciate your consideration of this as an in-kind contribution to help offset squid management costs. And I would also add, in closing, that we had a very productive, I think, we appreciated the time. We had a meeting with Gary Stacey and Dale Sweetnam last Thursday, and we're working on trying to put together a partnership with the department to expand their on-the-water research program for squid and address some of these management issues. And we've gotten real positive support. We haven't nailed down any of the details yet, but we would continue to appreciate your support of our partnership and also to include our research as part of the overall program. Any questions? Thanks very much.
Thank you. You're up.
Hello, commissioners and staff. My name is Gordon Daly. I'm a commercial squid light boat operator, owner. I'm here. I had to purchase a permit for my vessel after going through the process and appearing in front of Cunningham and at Sacramento, and I've been going to quite a few meetings. Mr. Rogers, I don't know if you recall, I gave you some a folder of my in Santa Barbara of the history and some of my case. I've been fishing squid since 1980, 16 or 26 years now, and I had to buy a permit. The guy before me appearing on in his appeal was granted a permit with 4 months of fishing, and I was in litigation for 1 year during the period of time that I would have qualified during the qualifying window, and I was granted a permit. And under good faith in any other courts of the state, I think that's considered good faith that granted I would have been able to, my boat wasn't finish my boat and have it in operation prior. But I'm just here, number one, to say that if the non-transferable permit, grandfather permits should be transferable, there's no reason to punish individuals such as myself by a lesser permit. And then the other thing was associated to the cost of the management in the squid fishery. To transfer that cost to the fishermen, it's $1.3 million. I think it needs to be a little house cleaning done in the fish and game to reduce the cost of the management rather than some individuals have numerous boats. And as it was brought up before, in an El Nino year, in the 87, 88, there was 2 years, no squid, floored me. I was financially completely upside down. My main fishery is squid. And I guess that's about it for me, but I just hope that the department will consider the grandfather as a transferable permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes public testimony. I think we're going to have some questions for you.
Okay.
Do we know?
Start with me.
I'll let you start.
Oh, thank you. Can the department comment on this issue of the disparity of the fees between the various fisheries?
Yes. Under 711 of the code, the department's required to recover costs of running the fisheries. It's supposed to be self-sustaining. in most cases in our history, we've not, and the commission's not had authority, and those fisheries have generally not been covering their costs. Currently, we bring in about $3.5 million in total. These are really crude numbers from the commercial fisheries, and we're spending about $6 to $7 million on managing them. This is an issue. I think one of the gentlemen pointed out, most of the fisheries are not paying their way. There are a few exceptions, and this is something we've talked to the commission about, doing an overview of really looking at this fee structure. We do not prefer collecting the bulk of the fees from the permits because of issues that were highlighted here.
Right.
It makes a lot more sense to cover it from landing taxes so that when the fishing is good, they can afford to pay it. When the fishing isn't good, they don't have to pay it. However, we're still going to need some base permit fee because if there's no landing
right.
taxes, we still have management costs in those bad years. Another issue we need to talk to desperately about, with everything going on, the public's expectation of our management of these fisheries are going way up in terms of the science and this ecosystem framework. That costs a lot of money. And there is some fair argument to be made that not just the fishermen should bear those costs, and I think we got that message and that support with our new budget. The administration and the legislature did give us some general fund money, particularly in halbitrol, for MLMA, which includes commercial fisheries. So we are getting additional support. The bottom line is these fisheries are expensive to operate. We are always looking for ways to minimize our costs because we don't want to charge any more than we have to. But we can't operate in a deficit. It has killed this department for years. We've got to get out of this. We are very eager to come up with creative ways to get out of that hole, but we cannot afford to keep subsidizing these fisheries, at least not the way we have.
Okay, and specifically to the squid fishery, the disparity, several people raised the issue of the disparity between the other fisheries and where we're at in permit fees for those.
Yeah, the reason the squid's highlighted because we did a fishery management plan. There are not fishery management plans for really any of the other fisheries.
Okay.
So in that FMP process, under the MLMA, one of the things you do look at is the cost of running the fishery. You retool how the fisheries run, and then you're supposed to adjust fees. That's part of that MLMA FMP process. Squid was the first biggie to go through.
Right.
That's why their fees stuck out there. You'll remember, most of you weren't here, I think. When the FMP was adopted, we actually asked for a $5,000 permit fee because of our estimated cost. So we're back again saying that the $2,000 doesn't cut it. We would love to go after an adjustment in the landing taxes. Unfortunately, that's not in our purview. That's in the legislature. We'd love to work with the fishermen to adjust those. I think that's for them a lot better deal. In reality, it's probably going to be a combination of permit fees and landing taxes. I don't know if that answers your question totally.
Sure.
But
it does. Second question I had was several people also raised the issue of the Squid Advisory Committee and where that's at, why it wasn't used or hasn't met?
Money.
Okay.
All those committees cost money.
We
like those things. You know, we have a lot of committees. It requires staffing and funding to operate. We are certainly interested in it. I don't know. Dale may want to speak specifically. I think, were you involved earlier, Dale, in those? Or Marcy can maybe.
Currently, the squid biological units are still not right now fully up and operational as we had anticipated. Because of the budget reductions that occurred over the past couple of years, we actually lost positions that were specifically dedicated to squid, two laboratory assistant positions in particular, and part of another position. So our ability to actually conduct and continue on with the advisory committee structure was one of those places that just hasn't risen to the highest priority level when you have the baseline work to continue to do. So As noted in the cost estimate, we're actually running only at about $312,000 right now for the biological work, and our estimates of the bare bones basics amount needed to run the FMP alone, not enforcement, just the FMP, was $550,000.
Okay. And then one final comment, I guess, is that I think the commission's role has got to be to support these fisheries paying their full cost. If we do not have support for, let me go back, let me ask a question. If the fishing community and the department agree on an increased landing tax as the best mechanism, who would oppose that at the legislature if we had everybody in agreement here that that was the best approach? The processes will just, okay. Thank you for answering. I understand. So you would be opposed?
No.
Okay.
No, she'd address it.
Okay.
As a correction, or as in a note, she does not represent all the processes. That's part of the issue.
Okay.
Excuse me, Sankey. We represent all but one. We represent 99% of the processing sector. And we have had this discussion. The reason why the landing tax issue got overturned in SB 1535 was because other, and I will call by name the California Fisheries and Seafood Institute, groundfish, the high value, low volume. We were very much in favor of seeing an ad valorem rate, but we're not going to divide the industry over this. But what we did say we could do, and Zonke and I've had this discussion, we'll try and carry specific legislation. If you cannot somehow include the volume that we pay for all of the fisheries that we generate to the department, for which the department has very little management, and consider that as offsetting the squid, we'll go to the legislature and ask for species-specific, lower the sardine tax, which now contributes $635,000 a year on average, for which the department has very little to do, although they do a little bit, but not that kind of volume worth in terms of management. So that's part of the discussion that we're having with the department right now, but we would still like to see the accounting of the enforcement costs, because that $530,000 line item that's at the very top that says FMP, in the FMP itself did include $200,000 for enforcement, and it gave the formula for how that number was generated. So we're still trying to resolve how much does it really cost for squid, but we're more than happy to go to the legislature if we have to.
Thank you. So I'll finish my comment is if our only discretion then is to set permit fees, and I'm going to support a higher permit fee until we get that agreement and we get that legislation to pay for itself. That's where I'm at as a commissioner, and I know it won't be popular today, but that's where I'm at. Well,
my sense of this is that the commission needs to bifurcate what's in front of it at this point. I would like to see the department and the commission do an across-the-board look at all, not an FMP, an across-the-board look at all of the commercial landings and the commercial fisheries that the department and the commission oversees, and take a look at the revenue, the potential revenue generated by all of those, and roll up our costs for the management of those fisheries. One of the things that would do is that, one, it would give you a look at all of the revenue that's available for landing fees and permit fees. It would give you a much more accurate roll-up of the costs, because then there wouldn't be this $500,000, and then when you, I'd be willing to bet you if we did individual FMPs on all of them, we'd have probably $100 million in enforcement fees, or some, you know, I don't mean that, but it's some egregiously larger number than is actually possible, because we did them individually, and we had to guesstimate, we had to be conservative about covering the costs. It's not that someone's trying to do it wrong, they're just trying to be conservative. I think that we should not consider an increase in permit fees today for squid. I think that what we should do is take it back to the MRC and look at all of the commercial fisheries, every single one of them. Take a look at the permit, at the cost, and therefore the landing fees, and come back with a cogent across-the-board program, not one that's arrow-targeted at one of the fisheries simply because its FMP came up, but look at them all across the board. Having said that, the thing that I want to bifurcate out of this today is this light boat thing, which we got to take care of today, because if we don't, it's ridiculous. So in other words, I don't like large one-time permit fees. Philosophically, I like landing taxes, because if the fishing's good, everyone's right. Fine with it. If the fishing's not, people aren't fine with it. And to me, if the fishing's not, It's really the cost to the people of California, because this is a public trust resource, not to the fisherman who's trying to, you know, who doesn't have the money by definition because the fish aren't there. And yes, we have ongoing department costs to cover, but it's the public trust resource reason why the department is doing that. And therefore, I don't see putting that on the fisherman's back. So what I would like to do, to reiterate, is put it to the MRC to do an across-the-board commercial fishing look at our costs and our potential revenues, both in terms of permit fees and landing taxes. But today, take care of the light boat.
Can I ask the department to respond to that process, that would, what that would take to institute that process across the board?
Yeah, and I want to add to that, and Cindy, I'm not interrupting, I'm sorry, but to that question, because I'm somewhere in between where Cindy and Mr. Rogers are. Sure, it'd be great to look at across-the-board fee schedules, but in the meantime, how do we fund the squid fishery? I mean, do we wait for 5 years? Well, as is isn't enough. I mean, we decided that when we did the FMP. So I'm just trying to figure out, how long would it take to do an across-the-board analysis of all fees? It could take 10 years. It's taken us 3 years. 3 years. To do this FMP for squid right now, and we're still not finished today. So all I'm trying to figure out is, where are we in the meantime until we decide how to do a fee schedule, and can we operate the squid fishery with the current fees if we don't approve an increase today?
If I may, what I'm suggesting, Sankey, so that you know what you're answering, because I'm the one who put that question on you, I do not mean, when I say an across-the-board look at all of the commercial fisheries, FMP level of analysis at all of, of all those fisheries. What I mean is, we know exactly what the landings are on all those fisheries. We got that. And it shouldn't take more than actually a couple of, maybe even just a month to roll up our, if that, to roll up our costs of managing those fisheries. You know what they are. So this shouldn't be something that takes a long time for us to come back to. FMPs take an incredible amount of time, because there's a tremendous amount of public input back and forth on that. This is all within the department. In other words, what are the landings? What are the costs associated with those fisheries? Then the commission is in a position to put a uniform approach to all commercial fisheries, rather than picking on the first guy out of the box.
Mr. Mastro.
Well, I can't speak for Mr. Stacy, the Marine Regional Manager. I think this is a good idea to go through, and we'll call it a policy approach to it.
Exactly.
How you want to share the burden. Ms. Pleschner's proposal for a lumped wet fish thing is a very intriguing one to us. There are pros and cons to it. So the big issue is the cost and time of actually doing that process and that effort. I think at this point we would ask to come back to you with a kind of a fleshed out proposal how we might propose going through that.
I would view that also as an additional cost in the fishery.
Oh, yeah. You know,
it's a recoverable in that sense.
Yeah.
I understand, Sankey. I'm not trying to impose something more arduous on the department. In fact, I'm trying to avoid that. Because if we go through this every single time we look at an individual commercial fishery, and we have to recreate the bloody wheel every single time we get all of this Sturm und Drang, every single time we look at no. Let's get all that off the board. Let's look at this once. Let's have a uniform policy that the commission can adopt, you guys can adopt. We can go to the legislature to get the landings fees all together. In other words, somebody's individual political muscle on some particular San Francisco fishery, to pick on somebody, you know, would be off the board. We would go across the board with the entire, as you say, a policy look at it.
Yeah, I think we'll come back to the proposal. I'm not sure this is going to be a big project, though.
I don't think it will.
Got a lot of different players.
Well, I think. Yes.
One thing, when we were in the Squid
Come
Advisory
Committee.
Come to the
mic and identify yourself,
identify
please.
Yourself, please.
When we were meeting in the Squid Advisory
please
Committee.
Please identify yourself.
Donald Brockman. And in 2002, we sat down with Maria Vokovich. Marcy was there. And our blue ribbon panel, whatever you want to call them, we brought up the tax to. So that, you know, we were talking about fees. We were working together as an industry. And we got squashed that day. And then when we brought this permit fee up in 2004 when it was $5,000, and we did, I think it was Mr. Flores said, let's get it into the landing tax. Well, here we are, like Bob says, we're 2 years down the line, and nobody still has gone to the legislator to change that. It's been brought up. The industry supports it, but nobody has moved forward with it. And what's amazing to me is squid is California's biggest resource. Sardine is a little tiny resource, and it pays $600,000, and the squid fishery only pays $250,000 in landing taxes. It's lopsided. So, you know, something needs to change there to make that even, and we're all for that.
It is exactly that kind of disparity in fairness that the department's uncomfortable with it. We're uncomfortable with it. The wardens are everyone's uncomfortable. The industry's uncomfortable
with it. And the Squid Advisory Committee, I understand, they're talking about money. Well, I didn't get paid to do that, so what are they talking? I understand a couple of the department people to be there is going to cost them money, but the Squid Advisory Committee didn't cost any money, and it saved a lot of these headaches.
Well, actually, it does cost some money.
Well, I understand I own my own business.
Let's not get in the middle of this discussion.
What I'm saying is that would be saving a lot of this, and like Bob says, this stuff drags on way too long.
And as you know, we met about this, and we agreed that $5,000 was too much. I was an advocate for saying it was too much. We now have a sliding fee scale that's still too much for a lot of you folks. But I too think that the landing fees should be the place we
that's what we said in 2004.
You guys need to push the industry to do that and the legislature to do that. Have to help us do that, because they're not going to do it on their own. It's going to either fall on you
and Cindy.
Or it's going to fall
the average fisherman cannot afford that.
No, I understand. But I think there is a point in time where we hold people's feet to the fire. We adopt it that it'll begin a year from now, unless we all go to the legislature and get this changed. So there's a time limit. I mean, that sometimes you have to do that, because I guarantee you there'll be people from your fishery, maybe not you, but others, who will fight the landing tax increase. So if our only discretion is the permit fees, I'd rather hold people's feet to the fire, and we can say it'll take place.
So then you need to hold every fishery, fishery here, feet
I'm
to the fire.
I'm not opposed to that, except I need to hear from the department how long that's going to take. And
that's exactly right. I agree entirely with Commissioner Gustafson. Exactly well said. Put a time certain on it. And if we get a bunch of stuff from various stakeholders, and we don't get the legislature through, we will put it all, if the commission adopts that they are going to be self-supporting, we will put it all in permit fees.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Flores has allowed me to say one more thing. I would also ask the commission to ask legal, is there anything that prohibits considering this complex idea? So that you could take in a complex of fisheries, which involves the same people, both processors and virtually all the fishermen that do sardine, do squid, and mackerel and wet fish.
I would assume that could be part of the scoping of what we're talking about.
If we could do that, because that way
we need to research that whole thing. And I don't think that's going to take much time.
I hope not, because we can...
But having said all this, what we need to do today is take action on this. Okay. I would suggest putting it off to the MRC to listen to the department's commentary at the next MRC meeting on the fee schedule. But I also would suggest that we need to address the lightboat portion of this.
And I'll support that based on what I thought I heard Sankey say, and I want to be clear, that you can support this concept that we need to look at across the board, and that's a fair way to approach
it's way overdue, quite honestly.
Okay. So
it doesn't solve our problem with squid, but it's something that's very fair. We should be looking at all how we're running these
fisheries. Okay.
May I say something? Now, hang on. So moved.
So the move...
The motion is to take
the non-trans...
Hold, wait a minute. Our staff has something.
Yeah. There are three things before you, commissioners. Right. Number one is to establish the non-transferable market squid lightboat category. Number two is to adjust all squid fees. And number three is to take care of the light boat logbook form modifications and including them in the appendix. You may split these up according to the Office of Administrative Law. The problem comes here. You have noticed fees that are between $5,000 and $8,000. If you establish a non-transferable market squid light boat category, you can establish a fee for that of between $5,000 and $8,000. Or,
and that's a problem.
Or, according to Title 14, Section 699B, by default, when a fee is not established and you allow it to happen, the fee will be $30 for that fee for the time being. That would affect a total of two permittees to six permittees.
I think that's
so you could do that. Now, one last thing to say on this. The public has an opportunity to comment on what you've done, and if you decide to take measures one and three and not address fees just yet, then by default there'll be a $30 fee. I would suggest that we put this on the agenda to allow for public comment on the $30 fee, put it tentatively on the agenda for November. Staff may withdraw it if there's not public comment.
And that $30 fee would apply to the two to six additional new permits.
Yes, Mr. Hattori.
It impacted would understand that that would be until the time in which we establish a new fee schedule.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
that would be a procedural thing. I think it's important for this, but wanted you to know that.
Okay. Again, your motion then, Mr. Commissioner Rogers.
Yeah. Yes, President Flores. My motion then is to take items one and three and revert to the default on three, the $30 default on fees, and to bring that before the MRC as soon as the department can. And we could then also then notice for the next commission meeting. John, are you with me? We could suggest noticing this for the main commission meeting in November, so that you get your public comment, your fee comment,
with the recognition that we might withdraw that. There's a 15-day continuation period that goes on that we give the public an opportunity to comment on fees alone.
So moved.
Second. Point of order.
Just a point of clarification. So. Worst case scenario, as things are likely to happen and before the commission, this drags on for some period of time and these $30 fees go on.
Two people.
I understand it's only two people, but it's an unfair
situation
for the others.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Can we put a time limit on
well,
this?
Either that,
you have, we put a time
or it
limit
has to go between 5 and 8,000, which is likewise.
No, I understand
unfair.
That. That would be unfair as well.
For a new guy to agree to pay 5 to 8,000, they can choose to enter the fishery or not.
Well, I think more importantly, is there any other options
we have
to sunset those?
Yes, you have a couple of other options that are available. Number one, the notice date for fees in general was mid-June, so that will go out for a total of a year before the Office of Administrative Law would close that notice date. So you've got roughly eight more months on fees to look at that matter before it would be closed. The second thing that you could do, and it's going to be a little bit of an awkward thing for the fishermen, is you could go to another notice where you simply say we want to establish a non-transferable market squid fee of, say, $300. We could pick that as a number or any other number you pick. The problem with that is that you're going to have to renotice, as I've been advised from the Office of Administrative.
Well, and also you're talking about two fishermen, and,
yes.
And the cost of the whole thing would be more than the permit fee.
Yes.
So in 8 months we will be back. We'll have a sunset on when we're going to address the fees. Richard, I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
Can I just ask one question? I know where we are. I know there's a motion on the floor to go forward with Section 1 of the transferable and Section 3 of the logbooks and defer the fees. I just want to make sure I understand this. In the two to possibly six new fishermen that enter the fishery, The proposed fee at the current time, without us doing any kind of change, would be $5,000 to $8,000. If we don't make them do that, the fee required under the current other regulation would be $30. So I just want to discuss this real quick. Do we want to have them enter the fishery with a $30 fee or a $5,000 fee? I don't know if they choose to enter the fishery and they know the fee was $5,000 and they think they can make a profit from that and be okay with that.
It's an annual.
Why wouldn't we do it? I'm wondering that.
Well, I think what we've been discussing is that fee doesn't seem reasonable to any of the fishermen.
I know. But does $30 seem reasonable when these guys are paying a couple of thousand?
Could we provide you just a little bit more information for your consideration on this matter?
Sure. Please.
Yeah, please.
The non-transferable permit that's in front of you would become effective with the fishing season beginning in April of 2007.
Thank you.
So we would probably have time to renotice a new range of fees and have it effective prior
Thank
to
you.
That effective
that was
date.
That's going to be my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're okay.
Call for the question.
I know, but they won't. We don't have 3 votes to pass them.
All those in favor say aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Are you voting?
I'm voting aye.
Eyes have it.
Okay, now we have to do. Staff missed your motion.
What's that?
We missed your motion.
What's that?
Pay attention.
We already had
3 times.
The motion
was already
items 1 and 3 with the $30 fee.
Yeah, and then.
That's how I understood
the
it.
The fee part to Marine Subcommittee. Okay.
So at this point, we're not renoticing.
That was because Marcy
fees.
Said it doesn't start till April of 2004.
We
have plenty of time to notice a different fee.
And we try to put a caveat. We've already passed.
And it's referred to the Marine.
Then those are two separate actions.
Yep. And we try to put like
if
60
you'd like to renotice
limit.
The fee for the non-transferable light boat.
I mean, come on, we don't need to.
Then you have to take it off the table now.
We don't need to.
You can't adopt it as $30. So the decision is either to renotice the fee.
Wait a minute. It automatically defaults, correct? We don't need to.
That's overcomplicating. You don't have to do that.
Sonky, you want to?
Excuse me. As a point of logic here, if you approve the permit and we're forced to do the $30 administrative fee, you will be asking to have him buy another permit if you change another fee. Legally, there might be some complications with issuing him changing his fee mid-course. What we are proposing, since his permit isn't even valid till April, is just adopt the logbook and then renotice the non-transferable light boat with a different fee range, and we'll come back with the rest of the permits later under a different package. But then renotice just for this non-transferable so we can come in with a more reasonable permit and do this once instead of having a $30 fee for the first time and then a new fee
so
3
moved.
Months later. That doesn't make any sense to us.
Yeah, that's what I thought I did. But
oh, we didn't understand that.
No, I know.
Either, so thank you for clarifying.
Apparently I didn't either. So. That's
do you want
to? So,
so, moved so modified.
So modified. second.
Mr. President, modified. If I might. May I also get a clarification? So the proposal now is to approve only item 3 in this package and to take
one,
both of the other items
three.
Off calendar?
1 and 3.
No.
But I understood from what Mr. Mastrop was saying is he doesn't want 1 to go forward because 1 goes forward creating the non-transferable squid lifeboat operator. The immediate default permit fee is $30. And
why don't we just take each item that separately? How about if we do that in a motion? Would that clarify it?
It's going to probably have to be done that way.
Okay.
I think
all right,
let's
do that. Ms. Commissioner Rogers, would you like to start anew?
Mr. Cunningham, you have now confused me. I'm not sure what I'm moving at this moment.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
This particular issue of the grandfather squid light boat permit has been noticed and re-noticed many, many times. And these two gentlemen, we've kind of dragged them across California to establish a fee at to establish the permit now and let it default to the $30 administrative fee, would one, give them their permits and allow them to start fishing, and two, if you're going to analyze the total revenue landing tax as a package through the MRC, then perhaps we could come up with a better set of proposed fees to renotice at a later time as part of a larger package.
That's exactly what I thought I originally moved.
That was the original motion.
Yep. Mr. Rogers, I think your original motion was that, but then Mr. Mastrop raised the question of you were going to have at least two, perhaps, fishermen out there who had paid only $30, and perhaps the better thing to do, I thought I heard Zonkey say, was to take all of this off and bring it all back before the April of 2007 period of time so that we could have the right fee in place. Now, I'm sorry if I misspoke, but I thought that's what Zonkey suggested.
That's what he suggested, but I do believe that Richard was clear on his original motion. That's what I thought
I agree. Okay. Richard's original motion was to go forward with one and three, and there would be a default $30 permit fee. And then Richard's original motion also was to table the item of permit fees for all permittees for reconsideration in front of the Marine Resources Committee.
Correct. That's correct.
Yeah. And there's no problem with either one of those motions.
No. Okay.
All right. So
that's my motion.
All right. And I second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Same. All right. Now
it's perfect.
Yep. Light boat. Are we? Is that it?
No.
There's still one outstanding. Is that it? No outstanding issue. Thank you.
We're done.
All right. Does everyone understand that?
Yes. And I want to thank you, particularly in light.
Please come forward.
Dan Williams, commercial fisherman, chasing around the state. I want to thank you for moving this forward, particularly your motion, Mr. Rogers, and for Ms. Gustafson, I want to say $30 may seem very low, but I've lost, potentially, if it's pushed back to April, two full seasons. I've lost a season already, and this season, if it occurs as usual in October and November, this won't even go through the Office of Administrative Law till the end of the year. So I won't have a permit till beginning of next year at the earliest. Mm-hmm. And I have no problems paying what the regular fee costs, but you must recognize we have suffered huge economic damages.
No, and we wanted to take action on this today. I was just looking at the discrepancy.
Thank you for your consideration.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. Thank you all. We'll moving along to item number 20. Zonkey?
This is for the herring regulations. We've provided in your binder any comments we've received. Everybody seems to be happy with the herring regs finally, so you have it in your binders. Any questions?
Comments? Questions? Okay. Need a motion?
The first motion we would need is to certify the document.
Okay.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
And we can roll the next into one motion if you would like. It's to amend, or for the proposed project, and to amend the proposed amendments for the commercial herring fishery and the row.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That's it. Item 21.
This item, again, in your briefing binder, is a request by enforcement on regulations that allow for the option for deposition of wild animals when we confiscate illegally possessed wild animals. Right now, there's really no clear regulatory authority to dispose of them. This is a request to authorize going to notice of intent to amend 671.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
I get. We just amended 671 in May, right?
Yes.
And now we're coming back with
this. There's another section. It's a cleanup. The issue is we've had some cases where we've acquired these animals and we've been challenged legally about our authority to dispose of them,
okay.
Which has created a real nightmare for enforcement, and this is a cleanup to make it clear what our authority would be.
Okay.
And that's just notice of intent, right?
Right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, you'll get all the explanations once we file the ISOR.
Okay. Okay. Chair moves consent calendar.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Other? I think we already discussed future meetings. That brings us to the end of the day, the end of this two-day hearing. I want to thank you all. I want to thank staff. I want to thank the commissioners, and I hope you all have an enjoyable day, pleasant weekend, and a very safe trip home. This meeting is adjourned.
I'm in this big box.